Now back to the Midday Grind with Martin and Marlo on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
It's the Midday Grind live from the downtown Missouri Athletic Club. Jim Huber subbing in with Brian Hoffman for Martin and Marlo today. Missouri Valley Conference has their media days down here today. And it's nice and cool inside, by the way.
Very nice and cool.
Mike Curran,
about 95 outside.
It's ridiculous outside. We might set a record tomorrow, 97,
oof,
by the way. And we'll be at Schnucks at Lake St. Louis tomorrow.
We'll jump in the lake to cool off.
I might have to do that tomorrow. But we're here today for the Missouri Valley Conference Media Days, and Mike Curran joins us, the Associate Commissioner. And I call you the keeper of the numbers for the conference. You have every number that anybody needs somewhere, I know.
Well, yeah, I've been doing this for a long time. This is my 28th year coming up, so more of a historian, and the keeper of the numbers is a good description.
Let's first off recap. Last year was a phenomenal year for the conference. Not only do you add like Valpo, but we all know what took place with Loyola, and it captured the country.
Yeah, it was scary. You look back and you think, if they don't win Arch Madness, the likelihood of them making an NCAA tournament run disappears. I mean, they were a bubble team. Wrongly so, I think they should have gotten in, and by what they've done, it certainly warranted that. But had they not won our tournament, they would have been nervous heading into Selection Sunday. And you know, I don't know if that's wrong or not, but we need to be a too big league like we have in the past. But we have always had the team at the top rise to the occasion.
I'm curious then, along those lines of being a multi bid league, in the years following Wichita State's Final Four run, if they didn't win the conference tournament, the Valley almost by default became a two-bid league because the tournament committee recognized Wichita State's recent success in the tournament and how nationally they appealed to a wide audience, similar to what Loyola does. Do you anticipate something similar like that happening moving forward in the event of a Bradley or another program winning the MVC tournament?
Yeah, if the right things happen, certainly that could be a factor. That happened a lot with Southern Illinois back in the mid-90s when they won three straight titles. And then after that, they had a run in the 2000s where they didn't win the tournament, and we got two bids because they were nationally ranked heading into the tournament. And then Creighton made a large run when they were a member of our league. So we've had teams that they could not take.
Right.
And then the second team, which was worthy, but they had to win the tournament.
Is there any number that you can put on what it meant?
Financially, yeah. It $8.5 million to the conference, which we distribute to our member schools. And that's spread out over 6 years, so it's not an $8.5 million check in one season. But it meant that over the course of the next 6 years, that money from the basketball pool distribution, which comes from the CBS Turner contract, comes to the league.
Now, I know you would have these numbers, but you had lots of success in this tournament. What did I see in your numbers, 18 and 12 in the last 6 or 8 years?
Well, we have since the 2012 tournament when Wichita State lost a first-round game. We've won a first-round game 9 straight times. So that's probably unmatched by any other conference, winning every first-round game in the last 6 or 7 years. And, of course, Loyola kept that run alive, and we hope that we have two schools doing that next year or more.
We all look forward to the conference tournament. What are the dates this year for the conference tournament?
March 7th through 10th. It's a Thursday through Sunday format again at the newly renovated, newly named Enterprise Center. We're excited about the changes that inside the building. It'll be a good fan experience. They changed a little bit of the back of house where we operate with the interviews and things like that last year. But the new updates will be incredible. We're excited about the new building, and I know our teams are too.
I know there was improvements the year before that were needed, especially for you guys, to get the right television package. Am I right?
Yeah, and it helps us with NCAA tournament bids too. They needed to add another locker room, which they did. So we have plenty of locker rooms for our teams that are high quality. They just refurbish the locker rooms, and they've got some other areas down low that we use for interview rooms and a media work room that we're trying to think through that for this season. We'll see what they have over there when we're actually taking a tour over there tomorrow to take a look at the new things. But yeah, that's important for us to have the NCAA tournament continue to come to St. Louis. We have a first and second round there in 2020.
2020?
Mm-hmm.
It'll be here before you know.
Yes, we're actually co-host. We're hosting in Kansas City next year, not co-host. We're hosting a regional in Kansas City this coming year, so in March. So we're back-to-back years where we're hosting an NCAA event. We're happy to have it in St. Louis. We all live here, so we wanted to have it here at Enterprise Center.
That month of March, when you do that, has got to be chaotic because you not only do your own tournament, but then you're flipping around a week or so later and you're getting ready for regionals and other matchups.
For the past couple of years, I've had five straight weekends where I'm doing a tournament. So I've got our men's tournament is the first one.
Right.
Our women's tournament, we play in Moline in the Quad Cities. So we'll be there through 2021 at least. And then the first and second round, I'm either traveling or working as a timeout coordinator at one of the NCAA tournament sites. And I'm working a regional and I'm working the Final Four. So I've been missing my family quite a bit during that time, but it's good. It's good and exciting, and it's certainly more exciting when you have a team making a deep run.
Mike Curran is with us, the associate commissioner of the Missouri Valley Conference, here from the MAC. If I'm a casual fan, okay, and I'm listening to us right now, and I'm going, yeah, you know, the Valley. I see those guys make some runs. Give them some numbers on how successful this conference has been over the course of, you know, a decade.
Yeah, well, we actually we had released a new hashtag for our league today. It's called The Valley Runs Deep, and it speaks to our deep tradition of and long history. And a lot of people don't know that our conference was founded in 1907. We've been in St. Louis since 85. But we've had 18 men's Final Four teams. We've got four national championships in men's NCAA basketball, some other NIT championships. Women's basketball has been a good part for us, too. We've had two Final Four runs by Missouri State. So we've been around a long time and had a lot of success. You know, Oscar Robertson, perhaps the greatest player of college basketball, played in our league when he was at Cincinnati, when they remember. Larry Bird, of course, Percy Hawkins. A lot of great names have gone through our league.
People would be surprised, by the way, to find out which schools have actually spent some time in the Valley. I mean, if you're in the Midwest, you can point to and probably say, oh, yeah, they had some time in the –
Yeah, we did a little research, and of all the Division I conferences, we've had the most current and past member, or the third most current and past member. We had 34 all time. You know, the Big 12, which was the Big 8, which was the Big 6, was actually our league.
You know, right.
We had Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, Oklahoma State. They were all part of our conference at one time. K-State, they left and disjointed. Wash U was actually a founding member of the conference here in Missouri.
Really?
Yeah, they were. And not the division that they're right now, but we've had some interesting members over time. Butler in our league at one time for a couple of years in the mid-30s. But
yeah, if you were watching any kind of basketball through the years, your school might have been in the
safe bet. Yeah.
How about this year's group? You've got some new coaches and some new places on the men's side.
Yeah, we have three new coaches on the men's side. Evansville hired Walter McCarty, and he is an Evansville native, and he was actually coaching with the Celtics, and he's got a Butler background, the Brad Stevens connection. But he came back to Evansville, and he played at Kentucky. So we're excited about having Walter back in Evansville coaching that team. Dana Ford, who's been an assistant at two different schools in our league. He was at Wichita State and Illinois State, and actually was an Illinois State player. He's at Missouri State. And our third coach is Darren DeVries, who was a longtime assistant at Creighton with Dana Altman, and most recently I'm running Greg McDermott. So they brought Darren to Drake, and he's been looking for a head coaching opportunity, and he's going to do a great job there too.
You mentioned Dana Ford. We spoke with him about 10-15 minutes ago. You mentioned also where he's been, but he's what, 35, 36? I mean, he's got a lot of experience in a short period of time.
Yeah, when he was hired as a head coach at I guess it was Tennessee State. He was the youngest Division I head coach at the time, and he's been replaced by somebody else at this point. But he's been a lot of places, learned a lot of things. He's had some good head coaches to learn from, too, so I'm excited about it. He did a lot at his former school in such a short time, so I know that Missouri State and the Springfield community is really excited to have him.
And on the flip side, you've got guys like Barry Hinson, Ben Jacobson, Porter Mosier. Somebody told me 8 years now?
Yeah.
Where is the time going? I mean, really. I mean, you've got established coaches in this league, too.
Yeah, and it's nice to have people like Porter that have had success, and Jake at Northern Iowa, that don't go somewhere else. You know, we should be a destination conference for head coaching jobs, and I think those guys have established that sort of mentality. You know, I think Porter's a Chicago guy, so he loves the city of Chicago and Loyola's a good school for him to be, and he's had a lot of success there, of course.
You mentioned Porter, and he said it moments ago because everybody thought, oh, Porter's gone. You know, what that run is like, well, he's the next guy going somewhere. And he mentioned, he goes, he learned that sometimes where you're at is where you're happy.
Yeah.
And that's got to be refreshing to hear that.
Yeah, and I'm glad he said that because, you know, you know, just like every school, when they lose a coach, they have to rebuild. We have to rebuild as a conference when you have new administrators and you have new coaches, and you have to get everybody in the fray and point them in the right direction. We have a strong group of people that kind of get what we're trying to do with scheduling and doing the right things with student athletes off the court. So when somebody leaves, it not only affects the school, but it affects the conference too.
And it's nice to, when you guys made the acquisition of Loyola, I think some people are going, really? What if Porter continues to build? You're in the Chicago market.
Yeah.
That's pretty strong.
It you know, it's sometimes you can have a Chicago school without the market, but I think Loyola has delivered the market.
Right.
And they'll continue to have that allure in the city of Chicago until things go south with them and they're winning 14 games. But I don't see that happening for quite some time.
I would hope he can continue that success. And I mentioned in the last segment that maybe Porter Moser can become what DePaul was when I was a kid.
That would be great, yeah, to be that Chicago school. You know, we've got, you know, Bradley and Olney State touched the Chicago market right. A little bit. They're a couple hours south of there, but yeah, the city right on Lakeshore Drive when you got a school right there. So yeah, but that'd be great if they were the DePaul that when we knew DePaul.
Right.
Yeah,
with Raymeyer and Aguirre, and you can go down the list. That was a powerhouse up in Chicago, and they owned that market.
Yeah, and then that town will latch on to a team that did it with Northwestern a couple of years ago,
right.
And Chicago was all over the Loyola scene last year.
Well, before I let you go, I know the numbers haven't come out today, but your conference is wide open this year, isn't it?
Yeah, we're going to do our poll in about a month, and I think the four Illinois schools that played in our semifinals of the tournament will be the four that are favored. But we're pretty deep. We have a lot of returning players. So I think it was 37 or 38 starters that are back from last year of our 50 possible starters. It's going to be an exciting season. We have to do well in the non-conference portion because that, you know, when you're looking at the metrics that the basketball committee looks at to determine our fate, we have to do well early because that's our only chance to make a statement. And I think we've got some opportunities to do that. But it's going to be wide open. I think the four at the top will be the Illinois schools, but I think anybody can do it.
I lied. One more.
Yeah.
It's going to be strange because there's going to be new metrics that are going to be used this year. So that will be a learning curve, I think, for the entire game, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, we have, for a long time, you have used the RPI as a measuring stick, and that came out in 1991. The committee's been using it as one of their tools. They look at other things. They use the eye test and other things. But now they're using other ratings like the Sagarin and the Ken Palm and KPI and all these other predictive and other measures like that, but they've called it the net, so it's NET. I'm not sure what the acronym stands for, but it's the net, and we don't know what that means. We sometimes think that anything that's developed that's new isn't good for us.
Right.
So we'll see how that plays out, but the RPI has been pretty accurate in terms of how we look at our teams in our league, and when you're the top-rated RPI team, you generally are the best team. And we thought that was a pretty accurate measuring stick, but we are not sure how to schedule to get a good net value. So you don't know what to do yet, but I know we'll find out soon enough.
Mike, thanks for spending time with us here. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Letting us come on out. It's been fun.
I'm glad you're here. Appreciate it.
That's Mike Kern. He is the Associate Commissioner for the Missouri Valley Conference here on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com. It's the Midday Grind. Jim Huer with Brian Hoffman, and we're just about at the end of the show, are we not, Brian? End of the day, folks.
Okay, when's the end of the day?
At the end of the day, it's going to be tough to tell someone they might not be in it.
At the end of the day, even though there's moments where you're like, I don't want to do this.
Before we do the end of the day, I want to mention Triad Bank. If you have any banking concerns, go to Jim Regna, who was kind enough to invite Charlie Marlowe to a box seat at Busch Stadium, and then Charlie ate all the gummy bears that was meant for Jim Regna's son. So this may or may not be the last live read we do for Triad Bank. Down there in Clayton and Frontenac Plaza, great bank to get all your needs done, business, personal needs. Get them done at Triad Bank. Jim, I know we've kind of avoided this topic, but the Cardinals are playing the Atlanta Braves. I just want to mention something that I think should happen.
Okay.
If the Atlanta Braves do end up winning –
the National League East. And they have a sizable lead with teams fading behind them, most notably the Phillies. I think the Arizona Diamondbacks should raise a banner.
Really?
Yes, because, and I just mentioned this because we all know the Shelby Miller deal yielded for Atlanta Dansby Swanson, shortstop. He's been there up all year.
That's right.
And one of their center fielders, overall a good hitting guy, not having a great year, but starting center fielder Ender Inciarte. What I had forgotten about entering today, but I was texting with somebody who reminded me of this, the starting pitcher tonight for the Atlanta Braves, Touki Toussaint, was involved and is a really good pitcher, really good day today if you're not paying attention, but was involved in a salary dump in which the Braves absorbed Bronson Arroyo's contract and got Touki Toussaint, who entering this year was a top 100 prospect in Major League Baseball and is really, really good. A 22-year-old, hits the upper 90s, has very nasty breaking stuff, and when he's on, he is 100% on, which he was today. So I just think the Dave Stewart TLR years in Arizona should probably get like a 30 for 30. Because
it's been interesting.
They were bad.
They, you know, and I was thinking about this, in fact, just a couple of days ago about them. I was like, well, Tony's not involved with that anymore. And, you know, Arizona's had a pretty good season this year. They're not going to get in, but they've had a pretty nice run. But prior to that, it was a mess. And the one thing you brought up, the trades, I never got why they were even interested in Shelby Miller.
Right.
Because they knew what Shelby was when he was here, and there's a reason why St. Louis moved him on.
I think it's a good thing for TLR. I know we appreciate what he did here locally, but that Arizona and the Diamondbacks aren't necessarily a national fixture, because that would be like what the Knicks' tenure for Phil Jackson was.
Ooh, good call.
Got into a market, tried to take over a bit of a front office role, and then it just went downhill.
Yeah, that's right. Phil, nobody will ever mention that about Phil, by the way.
Right.
When history is done with Phil, they'll go, man, he was really good with the Bulls, and he had some fun time with the Lakers. What about that? Yeah, we won't talk about that. Because, yeah. Sometimes you're too smart for your own good.
Jim, I want to get your thoughts on this occurrence. So you ever do daily fantasy, MyBookie, FanDuel, DraftKings?
Yep. Not very good at it, but yeah.
So there was a bit of a clerical error on Sunday. The Broncos were playing the Oakland Raiders at home. Raiders were losing late in that game. And unfortunately, there was an error that on the live odds betting that listed the Broncos as 750-1 underdogs when they were down 19-17 late in that game.
A clerical
error. Plus 75,000. A gentleman bet not much, just a couple dollars on them and won, and it would have yielded $82,610.
Right.
Now, FanDuel is refusing to pay him and citing that clerical error. Right or wrong?
Wrong.
Yes, I agree.
Sorry, 100% wrong. Once you hit send and it's up there, you're responsible for that. And if you typed it in wrong, tough. It's like if I sign a contract and I put in the wrong number for the contract, tough. You signed it. And that's the same thing with this. I 100% wrong for me. Pay up, FanDuel. Pay up and just deal with it. And deal with your employee who put out the wrong number, huh?
It was over a small number of bets, FanDuel said, were made at the erroneous price. This fan caught it in the 18-second window when it was listed at those odds.
Oh, my goodness.
He caught it at the right place, right time, but unfortunately will not the bet will not be honored.
Oh, that's
They will wrong. Be honored at the odds that they were supposed to be listed at. So I think he's only going to get like $18.
Well, then he probably wouldn't have put any money down.
Right.
Come on. Your fault. 18 seconds was it?
18 seconds was it, and this fan caught it at the right time.
Wow.
That is the end of the day.
All right. Thank you very much, Brian Hoffman. Matt Rocchio back in our KFNS studios today helping us out. He'll be on with the Hardline guys coming up next in the studio. I'm sure Cam Jansen will have some good thoughts about St. Louis Blues last night as they opened up the schedule, preseason schedule. Jordan Kyrou, we talked about earlier, made a lot of strides last night with the fan base, and I'm sure they're going to discuss that and a few other things. I know Cam was curious to see how Chad Johnson, the backup goaltender, did last night. He allowed one goal through, I think, a period and a half. I don't know if he played the full two periods, but I know the guys will discuss that coming up a little bit later on. Don't forget, tomorrow we are at Lake St. Louis Schnucks, and that'll be from 10 until 1. There'll be hopefully some Matt Carpenter salsa left over there. I'm sure we can get some of that.
That'd be nice.
It'll be a fun trip out to Lake St. Louis to visit Schnucks. And as I mentioned, don't forget, over the weekend, we've got lots of live sporting events coming up for you here on 590 The Fan. On Friday night, Illinois takes on Penn State. That broadcast starts at 7 o'clock. Saturday, big SEC matchup. Alabama hosts Texas A&M. That's a 2 o'clock broadcast start. And on Sunday, it's an NFL Sunday here on 590 The Fan. The 49ers visit Arrowhead Stadium to take on the Chiefs. The Chiefs come home for the first time this year with a record of 2-0 and a quarterback who has thrown 10 touchdown passes, Pat Mahomes, through the first two games of the season. And then at 3 o'clock, the Cowboys will visit the Seattle Seahawks. So keep an eye on that this weekend when you're out driving around and you want to tune in to 590 The Fan. That is going to do it for us. For the Midday Grind, we thank you for spending part of your day with us. I'm Jim Hewer, in for Martin Kilcoyne, Charlie Marlowe. Alongside is Brian Hoffman, and thanks to Matt Rocchio back in our KFNS studios. The Hardline comes up next. Bringing me down. Congratulations. Congratulations. How good.